coverage for the Keeping It 1000 podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Use promo code DNVR when you sign up, including tonight. If you want to bet on Friday night preseason games, you can go ahead and bet. There's already a Nuggets line out. I don't even know. Dev, do you know, are the Nuggets favored tonight or underdogs? They got to be favored, I imagine.
They got to be favored.
Maybe they might be. It's preseason.
Why are they an underdog?
Preseason. What can
Minnesota.
You?
Minnesota. Come on.
Favored by three. There you go. Coach seems to like that line. So take the Nuggets
Malone
preseason.
Never tries to win.
Well, that's true. The preseason.
Fourth quarter and it's over.
Yeah, that's true. You got to get other guys in there. You got to find out if Peter Cornelie gives you
that's
anything.
That's your philosophy. That's not my philosophy.
Well, we're going to get into your philosophy for preseason, for training camp, because that's what's going on right now. Teams are, they've been together for a couple weeks. Philosophies are being put in place, rotations are being solidified, all that stuff, and I want to get Coach's perspective on that. But the meat of today's story is going to be talking about ideal roles for the players, and how does a coach establish ideal role? Maybe a coach doesn't. Maybe a team collectively establishes what players' roles are going to be. I want to talk about all of that, hopefully peer behind the curtain a little bit and see what it's like for a team behind the scenes. But first, Coach, it's good to see you. It's been a while. Been a long while since we've last talked. Last time we talked, you said our August, September, that's your off season. You like to disconnect from basketball. So we disconnected from our show, but we're back. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I've been in the gym. I went back to North Carolina for our golf thing that we do back in Pinehurst, North Carolina with all the North Carolina coaches. That was fantastic. And I went to Charlotte training camp. I'm probably going to go to my son's training camp. He was hired by the 76ers
right.
to be a G League coach.
What's their team? What's their G League team there? Do you know what it's called?
Blue Hen. Blue,
the what?
Blue Hen or Blue?
I thought it was like Blue Coats or something. Maybe I'm wrong.
It might
I can't
be Blue
remember.
Coats. I don't know. It's in Wilmington, Delaware.
Yeah.
And
Wilmington, Delaware. That's where it's at, huh? That's home to Bones Island.
And so, it's fun being back in the gym. I'm talking to a lot of coaches. I was playing golf with two other coaches today, and the subject was Ben Simmons. Why did the Nuggets not go after Ben Simmons? And I said, I didn't think about it very much, but I think he fits Jokic and Murray.
Well, let's get into that. So Jokic and Murray fit very well together. I mean, that's well established. Ben Simmons, his number one trait, in my opinion, is defense. He's a great defensive player, team defender and on-ball defender. I said that you didn't nod along. So that's not, you don't think defense is best. He's got a lot of skills, but
no, I think he's a balanced player without a jump shot.
Right.
And, there are a lot of players that have gone from being average or below average jump shooters to halfway good jump shooters. So I think that'll come. I don't know why he hasn't figured it out yet. I don't know that answer, but I love his passing. I love his length is unbelievably long. I think what you're trying to do when you make that type of trade is, does he fit with your stars?
And right.
I think he fits with their stars.
Where does he fit? Where does he fit with them? As a power forward?
Well, I think we've all argued that Murray, when he is offensively into the game, plays really well. It's kind of when he tries to figure out his role as a point guard out there, that sometimes he looks like he's lost a little bit. So Ben Simmons, when he's in the game, I would say the majority of the time, let Murray be a scorer. And then that 20-minute window that Simmons is sitting, Murray becomes a point guard.
Right, right, right.
And yeah, I love Monte Morris. I love some of their young players. But after thinking about it on the golf course today, I just said to myself, Ben Simmons actually looks pretty good.
Now, what about,
because I hear he's going to be traded to Indiana for basically nothing.
That's what you're hearing. It's Indiana for a cheap deal.
A cheap deal. LeVert, Brogdon, and one.
Wow. Look at we might have some breaking news here, or at least some good rumors, sourced rumors coming in here. It does seem like the price is not very high, and what you're talking about are players that are good, but Denver has players that are good like that you can keep a core intact. The problem, Coach, and I want to keep talking about this because maybe, who knows, maybe it pops up again. The problem is, my understanding is the Nuggets could not trade anybody other than two players basically to make this work: Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, just because of the way the CBA works and the legality of it. So I know your plan here is to pair Simmons with those two. And, you know, Michael Porter has that poison pill contract because he just signed one, so he can't be traded. You got Aaron Gordon. So I don't know. But it is interesting that you feel so strongly that that's a championship three or a three that makes more sense than whatever they have now.
I'm a little frustrated with, I don't know, the Broncos, everybody thinks they're going to turn around and become a championship team. I don't think the Broncos are even close. And the Nuggets have had a good run in the bubble, which I don't value as much as I think the fans of Denver value.
Right.
That year should be, in a lot of ways, thrown away. But you guys are hanging on to it like it's a gift. I mean, we're there. We're going to be great. I don't think the league feels that way. Okay. They still think Denver has to arrive. And you put Ben Simmons in this lineup, I think it's a scary lineup. It goes from the group of guys in the Western Conference, you know, where Denver fits. Is Denver in the top three? Is Denver in the middle three? Or is Denver in the last three? You know, there's some really good teams looking at Utah. Top three, middle three, bottom three. Clippers, top three, middle three, bottom three. Dallas Mavericks, top three. I mean, you got a list of five or six teams that I think everybody thinks could be really, really good.
Yeah.
But it's summer talk right now. And
it's your favorite.
And the whole thing comes out is Denver's missing their second best player, their point guard, and Malone does a great job of figuring out how to make it work. But I think he's been given that assignment too much. I would like to probably see more consistent roles, more consistent responsibilities than they have over the last two or three years.
Yeah. If Simmons was here and Murray was here and Jokic was here, let's say this happens maybe later in the season. What ideal pieces go around those guys? I'm not asking specific players, but what types of pieces fit around them?
Well, I think you're going to overreact because you're going to play Ben Simmons, who can't make a three right now. So you're going to overreact and say, you need shooters. Well, you know, I still think scoring at the rim, at the free throw line, and at the basket, and having a flow mentality to help each other with getting shots is the way to play basketball. Ben Simmons plays that way. Jokic plays that way. We're not even talking about their guard play. So I think when Murray comes back, he'd fit into that nucleus very quickly and very strongly. And then, you know, you got to fill your team in with good shooters. But every NBA team is always looking for shooters. And do you have to give up Porter Jr. or Gordon or Monte Morris or P.J. Dozier? You have too many players. You have too many players for a eight to nine-man rotation. That's my comfort zone. I think most NBA coaches have that comfort zone. Malone at home doesn't mind going to 9 or 10 and sometimes actually 11. On the road, he's more like an 8 or 9 guy. The coaching staff obviously knows the answers to these questions better than I do. But, I mean, I didn't even think about it when Ben Simmons stuff has happened for the last couple of weeks. I didn't think about it in Denver, but today on the golf course, it was discussed.
This is my last one for you on the subject, because I didn't think we were going to talk Ben Simmons today. You know, that to me, that conversation kind of came and went. Maybe it has, but what about character concerns? And I don't know Ben Simmons. I don't know anything about him. But it seems like Denver has been especially they've really put a heavy influence on culture. And, hey, we want only guys that are going to fit in and buy into their roles and this or that. Are you concerned at all just seeing how things have shaken out in Philadelphia about that with Ben Simmons? Or he's too good. Don't worry about that stuff.
I think he falls into the category that up until, you know, what, 2 months ago, did we have character concerns about Ben Simmons?
I don't know. I really don't know that.
I don't know either. I don't know that. I mean, what's in the Twitter world and on social networking and on the internet, you know, it might have 50-60% of the truth out there, but in management's got to figure out the other percent.
Right.
Ben Simmons, to me, is, I've never seen him dogging on the court. I've seen him frustrated on the court, but I've seen him be the best player on a lot of NBA courts. And a guy that has the talent to be the best player on NBA court on a consistent basis is probably going to be able to give, you're going to give him a little bit. You know, unless he's just a total jackbutt.
you can say a jackass.
I don't see that in him.
Yeah.
I think he's frustrated with what happened in Philly.
Okay.
I think he's frustrated with Embiid. Again, this is my feel.
Right.
It's not fact.
Right.
And I think he's a little frustrated with the anger that he was punched with in the playoffs last year. He didn't feel he was protected very
well. Oh, 100%. There's no question about that.
And so, you know, that will that heal in Philadelphia?
No.
I don't think it will. So,
no.
So, you know,
hey,
I think you're taking an all-star basketball player, a very young all-star basketball player, that will shoot the ball better than he is shooting it. And he's 6'10".
Yeah. Hey, I was with it. I've been on the Ben Simmons train for a while. I just think that train has left the station, unfortunately. But maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. Let's get into some training camp stuff here. I'm curious, just from a head coach, you know, what would your goals be for the Nuggets heading into this camp? And how, as a coach, do you establish what your goals are to accomplish during training camp?
Usually training camp has priorities. It's a film study of who you are, what guys you've picked up. And some of it are, you know, as a coach, you try to magnify strengths and hide weaknesses and work on weaknesses to be better than they were last year. And your coaching staff might have, you know, certain coaches might have three different thoughts and another coach might have three other thoughts. But you got to come together in your coaches meeting before the training camp and kind of organize what you want to bring to the team as, hey, we felt we have to get better here. This was our strength. We want to sustain that and get it better a little bit. And then I hate the word role as much as delegate responsibility.
Okay.
I really liked a veteran guy coming off the bench, leading the bench, and kind of have your best players being responsible for the starters. And so, you know, do you want to go, you know, Monte Morris, is he going to be your starting point guard? Talk to him about that. What's he going to get? What do you feel that you need from him? And, you know, before, in the beginning of a season, you kind of have little games of giving them some goals, some individual goals, like Monte Morris's great assist to turnover ratio is really good. But I would rather see Monte Morris get more assists and be more committed to being a passer or creating more plays for the team. For me, he's a little conservative, I guess, is my best way to say it. And because of that, he doesn't turn the ball over. But I'm not anti-turnover. I remember talking to Andre Miller about this. I said, Andre, if you throw 10 passes over the top of the defense and get me 7 layups, you can throw 2 away. That's fine with me.
Right, right.
You give me 7 layups, you can turn it over once or twice. And so it's what you get in a give and take of the passing mentality.
So Jokic, I want to ask you about him. We'll kind of get into the players here. But Jokic, you know, became a father just, I think, last week. It hasn't been that long. He missed all of training camp. He's a veteran at this point. He's 7 years into this league. But he's also the hub of the team. How big of a deal do you think it is that he was not present for training camp? How hard do you think that made it for the Nuggets to accomplish their goals when the hub isn't there?
It's not the most positive situation, but in the same sense, I think that, you know, we've already talked about 2 or 3 things about old school versus new school mentality. You know, the new school mentality is you're going to skip when your wife's having a baby, you're going to take 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe a week or two off. You know, 30 years ago, that didn't happen.
Really?
No.
I mean, wife's having a kid, you're playing, yeah, you're at practice.
I think there are guys in the NBA that had birth of children when they were probably playing in the basketball game.
Wow, that's wild.
And don't get me wrong, the right way is probably today's way. You know, we just talked about the, you know, Ben Simmons, old school, new school. You know, old school, there would be a lot more anger about Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons now he's a new school guy. And he's piggybacking off of Kyrie Irving and
right.
piggybacking off of Westbrook.
Oh, it's normalized now.
It's normalized. Now, a management in Chicago might react totally different than management in Denver.
Mm.
The management in Denver is going to react totally different than Miami's going to react. And Ben Simmons might not even be on the radar in maybe 15 or 20 cities.
Right.
But he is on the radar of being a really, really good basketball player.
So what about the thing I'm most curious about? Because Yoke was asked about this, how much it would hurt him. He said, I know all the plays, which I thought was kind of a funny answer. But what about his chemistry with Aaron Gordon and to a lesser extent, Jeff Green? I thought training camp would be a great opportunity for those guys to maybe even you add a little bit in the playbook that utilizes those two guys or just quick little actions. How much do you think that maybe stunts the growth between those two developing chemistry?
Well, I think the shorter training camp and the mentality of training camp of no more two-a-days, a lot more days off. I mean, my first training camp, I don't want to throw that. I mean, we had 28 days, 26 were two-a-days.
Wow.
I mean, think about that. And I don't even know if we ever got a day off.
Let me ask you this,
but
though.
That's old school, new school.
Okay, but let me ask you about the old school. Were guys weight training at that time as well?
No. I mean, training camp was necessary because not half your team, but some guys on your team weren't in shape.
Right, right.
And
that's why two-a-days, some of this is just conditioning.
Yes, that doesn't happen very much anymore. But I bet you there's some NBA camps that got guys, we got to get them in better shape right now.
So when you walk into camp, in your time, we'll say with the Nuggets, you name names if you want or you don't have to, but were there days, all right, you get into training camp first day and you're like, that guy's way out of shape. You just notice it right away. This guy didn't come ready.
Yeah, you have guys, but not very many of them.
Yeah.
You know, Gary Payton, when he come into training camp, very much in shape.
Really?
But Gary Payton could get in shape in 5 days.
Right. Some guys are that way.
I mean, there's some athletes out there that don't need a lot of work.
Yeah.
It just happens. But there are other guys that might need extra work. So I don't think it's a high priority or situation that happens very often now, but I'm sure there's still some out there.
And Mike, going back to my college days, I had a guy that I had to do a regimen for like 2 months to get into shape for we had a test, you know, before, and the test was so hard. And we had one guy, a super athlete. He didn't do any of that. He'd show up at camp, do the test, almost pass out, but he could do it. And then he was good to go for the year. And I thought, man, this guy's crazy.
Yeah, I did a 2 mile run. And if you did the 2 mile run, you had to do the 2 mile run in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Yeah, it's not that hard of a one.
But if you did it in 12, you never ran sit. You didn't have to run sprints.
Okay.
And there was only one guy that ever did it in 12 minutes.
Really?
Deadlift Shrimp.
Really?
Yeah. He's the only guy.
That's pretty interesting. How do you challenge Jokic to get better? He's the MVP. So what, as a coach, he's only 26, but as a coach, how do you push the great ones? You know, coming off of the season he just had, what's the approach there?
That's a hard one because he's so good and he plays the game so easily. I think I would give him one or two defensive things of importance. Can he be more of a shot blocker? Can he have more presence at the defensive end of the court? The other end of the court, there's not much he doesn't do offensively.
Right.
I mean, I think he touches the ball a lot. You want him to touch the ball more? I'd probably say no. I want more team, the power of five guys playing together than one guy being responsible for too much.
Right.
So I think you got Jeff Green's a good pickup. They got some good, you know, they brought back Barton, who had an up and down year last year. They don't have their point guard. So who's going to play point guard? Are you going to play Monte with the first unit or do you want to keep him with the second unit? You know, Austin Rivers had a good run at the end of last year. Gordon had a good start, but he kind of faded last year. So, you know, all those things, I think, got to have some type of, you got to massage some of that into trying to maybe get Gordon more confident in his offense. And Jeff Green, I thought, had a great year with the Nets last year. I think he's going to be a good backup center. I think that's where they're going to use him.
Yeah. It's weird to say, but yeah.
And I think that pick and pop five man is really prominent, and Jeff knows how to do it. He's a professional. He's a great locker room guy, and he has great enthusiasm to try to be on a really good team that's trying to win a championship.
But I want to stick to Jokic for just one more question here, and that is, you know, we've seen teams bring in veteran players, retired players to maybe work with a guy for a week, or coaches to come in. I always wondered, I always would have loved, and I don't know if the relationship is there to make this happen, I always would have loved for Tim Duncan to come into camp and spend 2 or 3 days with Jokic, another guy who was an elite defender, but not necessarily because he was above the rim all the time. He's just a really, really smart defender. Is there a guy you would want to bring in, a Marc Gasol or somebody like that? And how does a coach go about trying to bring somebody in specifically for a player?
I think that's somewhat overrated.
Okay.
I want a coach that knows how to get results.
Okay.
I've seen some of these star Hall of Fame players do their act, and it's elementary in a lot of ways. It's basic. It's what they do well. As where, I mean, I would never turn down Tim Duncan to come in to help Jokic. So that's right. Kind of a perfect fit. They're both fundamental players. But, you know, Duncan was the best transition D and pick and roll defender I've ever seen play in the NBA. And he was almost perfect. I mean, his transition D as a big guy was great. And that's so important, that to be able to go to the offensive board and still get back defensively. A lot of big guys don't want to work at that. Tim Duncan
did.
Hard
work.
And pick and roll defense, the game, you know, Tim Duncan, as the game has gotten more and more pick and roll, Tim Duncan got better and better at defending the pick and roll. And that's why they, you know, and David Robinson was pretty damn good too. And so I think that's why you probably see them win championships.
We can move on to Michael Porter here. You know, he got a max contract. He just signed it with the Nuggets. How do you think that will impact him this year? Maybe in ways positive or negative. Maybe it's a weight off his shoulders, but just how do you think that might impact him?
Well, what does history say?
What does what?
What does history say?
I could go either way, I think, on this one. I think what you're getting at is a lot of times guys get paid and it's like, I don't have to listen as hard anymore or as closely.
Well, as coaches, we think history says it usually, I'm not saying it's going to drop, but I says it might plateau.
Okay.
And he's a young player that doesn't want to throw a year away. I think he's still a young player that can get better, can learn. I liked him last year. Did I love him last year? I probably didn't love him, but I liked him last year. And this is a year I think he comes back and he wins more fans. And the fans that I want him to win are players. Players not only on his team, but also players in the NBA that give him more respect. The value of being, I mean, players know that Porter Jr. is really good, really talented, but they don't look at him as a guy that's going to turn the corner on winning. I used to have a coach that Porter Jr. is a fantasy guy. He gets good numbers.
Yeah, fantasy numbers are great.
He gets good numbers, but does he do the little things that win games for you? And can he do those little things all the time rather than some of the time?
So what do you think his role should be this year? If you were a coach and you're meeting with him talking about roles, what would you try to tell him?
Well, I think the first thing on that list would be I would talk to him about shot selection, because I think he is in the mode that he should be given more shots. But I don't want more bad shots. I want more good shots.
Right.
I think he's got to be your leader in making threes, which is good because he's damn good at it. He seems like he fades as the game goes on. He scores more early than he does late. I would probably talk to him about that. Can we get you to be more efficient in the fourth quarter rather than be dynamic in the first quarter.
Do you think that's a age thing, though?
Yeah. It's a young player ego. I mean, Nene bringing up a guy that it would drive me crazy.
Yeah.
Because Nene would get 15 or 18 points in the first half and wouldn't even try to score in the second half.
I wonder if it's also a conditioning thing. And one of the things I like, you know, Michael Porter worked out with Steph Curry over the summer. Those guys have a relationship that go back. And he said what they worked on was shooting after conditioning, because it was all about who can make shots when you're the most tired. So right. He said that's the thing he took away from it. I just thought that was so interesting. And it made me wonder if maybe that's part of young players are still learning. Their bodies are getting stronger, but they're also still learning the level of conditioning it takes to be great.
No, I would actually have met on Michael Porter Jr.'s body. I would like to see his center of gravity get lower.
Mm.
I would like to see his balance get better. I would like to see his physical holding his ground be stronger and more physical. You know, he plays a little upright and a little finesse. And I think the more dirty he could get, the stronger he could get in some physical areas, I think would be valuable. I'm not sure, you know, shooters can make shots when they're tired. Great shooters make shots. They have a mental adjustment. But I think Michael Porter Jr. having a little bit in the back of his mind that he needs to be in great shape is something would be, I would like that.
I think he's a worker, because you never know this, instead of you're around the guy all the time, but I think he's a worker and has an internal drive. I know that, so in addition to working on the conditioning aspect of shooting and shooting while even when you're tired, the other two things he said he worked on was, one, a mid-post game, because he said in the playoffs he got guys matched up against him that were a little smaller, but he didn't have the ability to kind of shoot over or score over him. He referenced even Carmelo Anthony as a guy that was really good at, you get a guy on a hip and make some moves. And then he also talked about sort of like escape dribbles, or like moves that can create space with one dribble or two dribble, quick things to get open so he can get his shot off. Is that a good use of his summer just based on that?
Okay. I would say attacking the rim would be something that I would put there more. I'd like to see him become a guy that, when there's an open lane to the basket, he goes all the time.
Right.
And then also being a little bit more playmaking, to be able to understand that when the big guy comes to him, it's not about scoring, it's not about drawing fouls, it's good about making the next guy better. I would put playmaking on that list in my mind. The attacking of catching and going rather than always looking for being a jump shooter.
Right. I'll give you one more, Michael Malone.
The mid post.
Yeah.
Sounds like a workout guy.
Okay.
Or his father.
I see. Yeah. So you're saying a trainer loves that stuff because it's footwork, it's a ballet. It's
and the step back stuff, the escape dribble stuff.
Right.
Remember, only the great players get to shoot that shot.
Right, right.
And is Porter a great player? He can be a great player, but I don't know if he's a great player yet.
And it's interesting. It's just funny to think of him going up against Norman Powell last year, Mikal Bridges, guys that he had a little bit of a height advantage, not much, but that maybe were able to crowd his space and he would get those posts.
It's a bad offense.
Of course, if you're going there all the time.
It's a low efficient offense.
Oh, of course, so yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, you want the high efficiency is making threes, getting to the rim, getting to the free throw line. And now we're going to 5 or 6 or 7 on the list. I would say to stay in a stop 3 or 4.
So Michael Malone talked about one of the things he really wants from Porter this year is to get to the corners in transition. I don't think not attacking the basket or this or that, but just on break, secure the rebound, get to the corner as quick as possible, because he's such a great shooter from the corners. And because especially in transition, that mm-hmm. really stretches the defense. What about that for a point of emphasis? And what does that do for your team?
Yeah, I mean, running the court right now in the NBA is a lost art. And everybody's trying to play fast, but no one really plays fast. They play with pace. And Michael Porter Jr. running the corners, he should realize that the guys who make, there are more mistakes made defensively in transition defense than five-on-five defense.
Right, right.
So when you run and get ahead of the ball, they make mistakes. They give you open shots. They give you dunks. They give you layups. They mistake a pickup. And I think the game is easier played fast. I don't think Denver plays. I would like to see Denver play faster.
Right.
But do they have the? I mean, when your best player is sometimes your trail big, you want him to be in your offense 90, you know, as much as you possibly can.
Okay, we'll hit this first break actually here. On the other side, I do want to get to Aaron Gordon. I want to get to Will Barton. I want to talk about all these other guys and how you would talk to them about their role, how you would help establish that, and all of those things. But you guys, we are presented, as I said, by DraftKings Sportsbook, the official betting partner of the NFL, and they've got a Week 5 offer every football fan wants to jump on. New customers, this has been the offer for a couple weeks, guys, but it's a no-brainer. New customers can bet just $1 on any NFL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a single point. So the only way you don't win this one is if both teams go 0-0 into overtime, still finish 0-0, then you'll lose your bet. All other scenarios, you're going to win. The last time that happened, by the way, a team tied 0-0 was 1943, so pretty safe bet here. Again, $1, you win $100. DraftKings customers can also get skin in the game with the new same game parlays. We've been begging for this all last year. We complained about it, you couldn't do the same game parlay. Now we've got them, same game parlays right there on the app. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code DNVR, and bet just $1 on any NFL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a single point. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, call the number right there on the bottom of your screen, 1-800-522-4700.
What's the number one sportsbook?
DraftKings.
What's number two?
I don't know. Doesn't matter. We don't talk about them on this show. Doesn't matter who they are. So let's get back into here to training camp. Jokic, I think, easy one. Michael Porter, even to a certain extent, is an easy one. Now you get into Aaron Gordon, who joined the team late last year, you know, at the deadline, had to fit in, just fit in on the fly. And I think he did a nice job in the regular season of that. First of all, I wanted to ask you, he's a player that came from a losing situation for 5-6 years. And then he joins this one. I think he's happy to be here. I mean, all by every interview I've ever had with him, he reiterates that he's happy. He signed the extension. He wanted to be here. He loves the vibe. He loves the culture and just loves that the game's better. And it made me think, what players did you have experience with that maybe had spent all or most of their career in a no hope situation? You know, what are we really fighting for? And then came over to your team and it was like, wow, it's fun being a contender.
Well, those are all things you kind of talk about, because sometimes picking up the best player on a great team doesn't make him a good player on your team.
Mm.
Because a bad team, they score 100 points every night.
Right.
So the numbers, someone's going to get numbers. I don't think Aaron Gordon falls in that category, but I think he does have to redefine who he is this season.
Right.
I don't think there's any panic there. But I think you want to give him a comfort zone of where he doesn't feel like he's got to search out offense. Try to figure out what gives him the best chance. I don't know what the number is, but 15 points seems good to me. Murray being hurt, it might be a little higher before Murray gets back. So who does he play well with? Is it Austin Rivers? Is it Monte Morris? The young kid was playing well. TJ is a good young player. I would go out of my way. McGordon would be probably number one on my list of getting comfortable. And that might take 30 games.
I mean,
it's not going to happen in 10 games.
Right.
And I don't know, coming out of timeouts for lobs, coming out of timeouts to where he gets a kind of an isolation that works for him. Rewarding his defense. Little games to keep his focus and his concentration positive. And then, you know, I think he's got to be the leader of the defense in some ways. Take in the best player every night. I don't know if that's in Malone's philosophy, but I think I would say, hey, Aaron, your best asset coming in the league, I thought he was the best defensive college player I've ever seen.
Right.
Bobby Jones is first on my list.
Right.
Aaron Gordon's
back a lot.
And he hasn't lost being a good defender, but his balance has been more towards, I want to be better offensively. Well, let's go back and go, let's magnify your strength and let's work on your weaknesses. And I'll help you with your weaknesses and get trying to get you good touches and good shots. But you also got to give me an all defensive mentality, making all the first team all defense. I think would be something I would talk to him about.
I thought he had that mentality last year. I didn't think he looked, the word you use is thirsty. I didn't think he looked thirsty for shots very often in the offense. No. I thought he maybe embraced that role. But you said he guards the other team's best player. The best player's a guard. Are you talking 3-4?
Talking all 1-4.
So you think he should take, if it's Damian Lillard, it is Portland, say, hey, everybody, we're cross-matching here.
Lillard. Again, it's a conversation. And I would feel his reaction and then say, well, he probably doesn't want to buy this 100% of the time, but can I get 70% of the time?
Gotcha.
I think you feel it out. But you tell him that we need this. I mean, we need to be a better defensive team. And you're my number one defender.
Yeah. The reason I asked you the question up front about him leaving a losing situation is I always wonder, Denver continuity, there's so many positives to continuity, I think, as a team. But one of the things I wonder is, do guys take it for granted? They've been here now for 2-3 years. Denver's been a playoff team. I mean, you kind of pencil them in as a playoff team. And I wonder if having guys that are like, hey, man, it's not always like this. I just spent 5 years where we were eliminated by February. And I wonder if that provided a little bit of excitement. I even remember when Iverson came here. It was really early in the year, but leaving a team that was kind of over, their cycle had kind of come and gone. And you could just see how excited he was to kind of get injected with, hey, we're back to being a team that matters and a team that's good. And if Gordon brings that same thing.
And Orlando was a team that was falling apart.
Yep.
I know Evan Fournier on that team. And
yeah.
Evan was so happy to get out of there. And the one thing is, you losing builds negative habits. And sometimes builds negative attitude. And I didn't see that last year with Aaron Gordon. But, there's going to be a different pressure starting the season.
That's true.
When Aaron got here last year, they were a playoff team. They were going to finish 2, 3, or 4. Now, the challenge to finish 1, 2, 3, or 4, that's up for grabs right now.
Right.
I don't know. I haven't studied their schedule very much, but, I don't know what it's going to take to win the 4th seed or higher, but it's probably going to be in the mid-50s.
Okay.
Maybe lower because there's so much competition. But I think he's got to realize that you want to get a home court advantage in the first round and hopefully the second round. That's what you want. In the NBA, in my mind, people, a solid playoff team tries to build their foundation to where they're always going to win the first and second round. And then the next tier of winning the conference finals is the next challenge. And then, of course, the ultimate challenge is winning the finals. And all those, there's some steps. Have they definitively said that they're going to always win the first two rounds? I don't think that's true. They're close. I give them, they're close. They haven't proven they can win the conference.
Right.
And usually, I know fans want to skip it, say this can all be done in a year.
Right.
Well, that climbing that ladder sometimes takes Milwaukee, 4?
Yeah. Yeah.
4 years?
Yeah. And they broke through.
And then you look at Toronto, who broke through a couple of years ago, and now they didn't make the playoffs.
Right, right.
So you want to build that foundation of whatever the window with Jokic, you would want probably a 5-year window that you would get into that second tier where you're going to be playing for a conference championship. I couldn't say next 5 years, but
right.
If you got there, I would probably be happy with 2 or 3.
Right, right.
If they got to the conference finals 3 times in the next 5 years.
Just giving yourself a chance, like 3 lotto tickets. We'll see what happens.
And then this year, I thought was the number one situation that all the way into the final 8, maybe even the final 4, no one knew who was going to win.
Right.
There wasn't a guy that jumped up.
Yeah, I still like Denver's chances if Murray didn't go down. But, of course, that's what happened. But let's move on because I want to get to the other players. What do you want to see from Will Barton this year?
I don't know. Everybody's talking about him starting and all that. I think he's a great bench player. I said that 5 years ago when he came here. I love his energy off the bench. I love his energy to be able to play him with a guy that could get him going. You know, a player that said, okay, you know, the first unit stinks tonight. Let's get Barton going. And he has a power to offensively to lift the team. But Will Barton's not a bad defender and not a bad passer.
Right.
Probably my conversation with him would be, hey, this is where I see you. This is the minutes I think. But then I would say, hey, I want more playmaking on you. I want, instead of, I don't know what his turnover to assist ratio is, but I don't think it's probably much better than 2-1. Hey, can we get that closer to 3-1? Can we get your best assist year ever?
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, whatever your best year has been in the past, let's do better than that this year. And then, you know, I'm almost certain that Coach Malone is working on defense. That can we move from the middle of the pack to a top 10 defensive team this year?
Right. Do you think they can do that, given their personnel?
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. Because
Jeff Green defensively, how is he?
Well, I never thought of him being a great defender when he was kind of playing 30 minutes a game. But lately, I think he's more focused in that area.
Okay.
And, you know, if he plays center, he knows he's going to have to rebound
right,
the ball.
Yeah.
I thought Jeff Green pickup was first class. I liked it a lot.
So let's talk Jeff Green then real quick. I was going to go on to Murray. We'll save him for next. But Jeff Green, what would be sort of your message to him, and what roles do you see him playing on this team? You mentioned as a pick and pop big. He's been that as a five because he's kind of a five now. He's a pick and roll big. He's still very athletic, and even in Brooklyn, they were having him roll to the rim a lot and be a lob threat, which I don't think most people would think of him that way.
And I think that's great because I think the guys that understand when to roll and when to pop,
yeah,
are there. That list is not long in the NBA.
Can I ask you, what is it you're looking for? This is a good basketball question, but what is it? How the defense is committed? What coverage is in?
It's the same rule that I have in making. I mean, if the game of basketball tells you you should go to the rim, you go to the rim.
Okay.
If the game of basketball says make the three. Same thing when you're in the pick and roll. If there's a chance for you to be a problem at the rim, you got to go to the rim.
Right.
And when they're zoned up or dropping, then you pick and pop.
So do you see Jeff Green as a scorer for Denver primarily? Like what's his role on this team?
I just liked his presence last year.
Okay.
Sometimes I think the bench is really valuable. And I think he's going to be a bench player that's going to lift their bench. That I think there's going to be more consistent responsibilities because of Jeff Green being on the basketball team.
Oh, interesting. More guys will just so it's almost not a connector maybe, like makes everybody else's job more defined and more obvious.
More professional, more aware.
Okay.
And more understanding that the bench is very important to a championship team.
Okay. How do you keep Jamal Murray engaged? I've heard that he's going to be helping with scouting reports and doing different things like that. I don't know if that was his own idea, if that was Coach Malone's idea, but I thought, well, that's one way to make him feel a part of the team. Because I can imagine guys when they're rehabbing don't always feel a part of the team.
Yeah. Well, one, I would keep him with the team. I'd travel him with us. I would not let him have those 10-day road trips where he stays in Denver.
Mm.
Yeah, there's all types of game playing. You can play. I'm pretty sure he's shooting now.
Right.
So, you know, horse games, three-point shooting games, you know, keeping his eye sharp. But I think Jamal will do that on his own. I think he's individually inspired to get through this injury quickly. And his energy has always been positive. So, but there will be days that coaches and assistant coaches could help him maybe have better days.
What about Michael Malone? You know, he is now in his seventh season with the Denver Nuggets. I think his ninth season overall as a head coach. How different is a head coach in their, we'll just say, let's throw out the Sacramento years. How different is a coach in his seventh year as opposed to his first?
I think he's more consistently confident in going into a game. And I think in coaching, you know, the game plan is important. The foundation of how you're going to play in a game is important. But you also got to realize that at least 50% of the time, and probably more like 60% of the time, that game plan has got to be adapted.
Right.
It's got to be changed as the game goes on because of who's playing well, who's in foul trouble, you know, the flow of the game, and where you're playing sometimes. And I think that's where he's gotten great. He's gotten to be one of the top coaches in the league because he knows that if he can make almost any game a fourth quarter game, his team is in a great place. But in the same sense, he prepares his team to win a game by not having a close game. I don't know the numbers. I don't study the numbers like I used to. But I would like to see more control of maybe, I don't know how many fourth quarter close games they had last year, but let's just say they had 25. Can we get that down to 17 or 18? To where you don't have the stress.
Is that possible? I mean, the NBA game, it just, this is
I don't,
a fact.
I don't know. I mean, the numbers.
Right.
I mean, an average team in the NBA probably plays 50 close games.
Right, yeah, it's a lot.
You know, yeah. As where I don't know what Denver's numbers were.
Mm.
And I don't know what exactly the number that I think is a close game, and the stats might,
yeah, sometimes
might think different. Like, they might think a close game is 3 points. I think if it's, I don't know, six has always been my number. If I have a more than a 6 point lead, I felt really good. It got under six, I got nervous.
The NBA calls these clutch. I'm looking it up as you talk here because let me see here if I could find Denver. They actually say within 5 points in the final, you know, however many minutes. Oh, I clicked on preseason. I'll pull these up and just. It says the Nuggets played, let's see, 42 games, close clutch games, meaning that it was within 5 points in the final 5 minutes. So, yeah, about half, a little more than half is a shortened season last year.
And don't get me wrong, you have a tendency when you have Jokic and Murray that having that in your back pocket is a – because I thought Murray and Jokic at the end of last year was a top three, top five for sure, but maybe top three closers in the NBA.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they were great. They got to that spot. You felt good that you were going to win. Do we have questions, Kale? I know I put out there for some questions for Coach. Did you? Let's go to those now. What do we got here? Obvious question for Coach. What he thinks is the ceiling for Bones. Oh, yeah, we got to ask him a potential player here. I know it's your favorite. So have you watched Bones Highland, the Nuggets rookie, at all? Have you seen him play? So what is you think his ceiling is? And what is the first and most important thing that Bones needs to work on?
I love his ability to take the ball to the rim right now.
Yeah.
That's what I see more than anything else, his length. And not he has right now, he doesn't have a fear of going in and playing against the big boys. His athleticism is impressive. His length is impressive. I don't know, is he a real point guard or is he what we call that, a combo?
Combo guard.
Right now, I have a feeling it's more combo. I'd like to see him play make better. And his upside is get on the court. Can he get on the court? Right now, you know, I don't know. Can he get on the court? You know, is Austin Rivers in the rotation? Is DJ in the rotation? Is Monte going to play 35 or 25? Those are things probably yet to be determined. But my feel, and again, the practices are telling me more
than
the games are.
Right.
The games are the only thing I see, and what I hear is some of it's true, some of it's false. So I think the games will tell. But to me, I think he's a guy that's got to stay focused, work hard, and somewhere be ready to get minutes that might come in the first 20 games. But my gut says it's probably going to come in the middle of the season somewhere.
Okay.
Because of an injury, because of a circumstance. There's going to be a window for a week or 2 weeks that, hey, I got 20 minutes for you. Get ready. Let's go. Be ready for that opportunity because you got a lot of competition for minutes.
Right.
The depth of Denver's team right now is first class. And I hope the responsibilities are delegated in a positive way to where it doesn't become a problem. But I think, you know, over the years, I think sometimes the Nuggets roster has got in a tug of war that didn't help either player.
Right.
And I hope they stay away from that. And I think more defined, consistent responsibilities is kind of what's in my head.
What else we got, Kale?
All right, what type of role do you see Bol Bol having?
Come on, guys.
People want to know about Bol Bol.
Come on, guys.
No. Let's hear it. Is he a nightmare for a coach?
I think it would be a nightmare if you had to play him right now. I think he's in a position that, similar to what I just said about the rookie, is there might become an opportunity because of injury or situations that 20 games or in the middle of the season, he might fall into a 15-minute opportunity. But I don't think he's ready to help a team win 55 games.
Okay. What else? Let's go through these quickly.
All right. We've got two more coming in. How often do other coaches ask Coach Carl for advice?
Good question. You have a big network.
Oh, I don't know if I have a big network, but I have a lot of coaches that when they come into town, I talk to. I said I was at Charlotte's camp visiting Mitch Kupchak and Chad Iske. They're going to be better, by the way. Their additions are really first class. I like how they play. But, you know, I have a half a dozen college coaches and probably 10 NBA coaches that when they come to Denver or I'll get a phone call from maybe once a month, once every couple weeks, depending on winning and losing. And I stay in the gym and I'm actually gravitating. I went up to Wyoming and watched them play. Wes Miller at Cincinnati wants me to come there. Mark Pope, my ex-player at BYU. So I probably will do some college, a little more college. John Welsh, my assistant. We're going to go up to Northern Colorado, hopefully next week. We went to Davidson when we were in Charlotte together. So I try always to get in the gym and hang out. I love the game. And what I love about the game is where is it going? What is going to be the next impact defensive option?
Right.
Because the one thing we've talked about is, you know, this theory over the summer was, does anybody play defense?
Right.
Because the defense right now is losing the battle. So what is the adjustment in the NBA that can make it a more defensive game? You know, my answer to that is I think the NBA in the near future, if they want to balance the game out, they got to put the hands back on the ball.
Really?
I think they got to be able to slow down the guards and their ability to attack the defense.
Yeah. Might change the game in a way the NBA doesn't like. Guys like you, basketball purists, will like it, you know, but I think the NBA, for whatever reason, loves when Steph Curry scores 50 points.
Well, I think the NBA last year in the playoffs let the perimeter play a little bit more, maybe a lot more than I thought they did in the years previous.
I remember Austin Rivers getting called for a foul on Damian Lillard, right? I saw the replay in slow motion 8 times. I didn't know where he touched him, so maybe.
That's bad refereeing. That's not that.
No, they reviewed it and confirmed it. And I kept thinking, like, it was one of those plays where I watched it and I go, I don't know how you guard the NBA if that's an illegal contact on a 3-point shooter from half court.
And then there are situations where they ride the guy and they do hand check and they don't call.
Right, right. What else we got? One more, Kale?
Yeah, last one.
Let's get this last question in.
Should preseason games be used solely as experiments with different lineups without regard to final score, or would he, I'm assuming Malone, go with the presumptive starters and closers to give them some more time together?
Well, I don't know how many games he played. Five. I always played 7 or 8.
That's too many.
I always wanted to. I didn't want to have a bad record. I wanted to have a. a 3-4 record or a 4-3 record.
Establish it. Establish winning.
Well, yeah, I think winning. I don't want to take winning off the court.
Mm.
The other thing I would do is I would play at least one and maybe two games where towards the end of exhibition season that I'm playing like it will be the first game of the year. But that again, that's old school more than new school. New school seems to be no veteran player ever plays in the fourth quarter. Half the guys playing in the fourth quarter, I don't even know who they are. That's again, new school, old school. We go there all the time.
Well, coaches have gotten really interested in health and rest and those types of things in a way that definitely makes for some boring basketball.
Do we know that is the way it should be, though?
Should be. I mean, should is a
subjective. I mean, resting players, do you think they got more energy than my guys used to have 20 years ago?
I don't know the answer to that.
Do you think there are more injuries or less injuries than 20 years ago?
Yeah.
I don't think because of analytics and we have physiologists all over the place telling us this guy's tired. That doesn't mean they're right. So I kind of like anything that builds mental toughness and physical toughness, I want in my culture.
Right.
And giving days off and extending guys because instead of it's a 2-4 week injury. Well, when was the last guy that had a 2-4 week injury came back in 2 weeks? Doesn't happen. It's always 4 weeks. So I like mentally tough teams and physically tough teams. And sometimes load management doesn't develop mental toughness.
Yeah. I'm with you on this one. Last year you were maybe a little more asking that question. Sounds like you've answered that question. Now you feel even more adamant about it. At least that's kind of what I gather. But I do think that's an interesting, I think there's a lot to that. And I think there's something too. Jokic played all those games and there's like a mental strength you almost get from pushing through some of this stuff early on and maybe it carries with you. But that wraps it up, guys, for today's edition of the Keep It at 1000 podcast. I believe next week, if I tease this out, I believe we're going to have somebody from the 90s era Nuggets. I know who it is. I still want to tease. I'm going to tease it like that. Somebody from the 90s era Nuggets that was both a great player, fan favorite, and somebody you're going to really want to hear from on our Legend series that goes next week. You also have the Truth in Media podcast. You got the Forgotten Seasons podcast over things George Karl has been involved with. Anything coming up with Forgotten Seasons or Truth in Media this week?
The one we're trying to get that I haven't gotten yet is the Lakers when they had Gary Payton and Karl Malone. I think that experiment, whatever that was 20 years ago, is kind of what they're doing now.
Oh, a lot of just like bringing
old guys in, see if they're good enough to win a championship.
Now, I can't in good faith endorse that one. I can't endorse anything Lakers. It's just me. I'm sorry. It's like it would be asking you to promote a Duke podcast or something like that. You couldn't do it. I don't think I could get you to do it.
Well, I might be going to a Duke game this year.
Really?
Yeah. I'm one of our, Brett.
Yeah.
Brett's a Duke grad and one of my best friends.
Wow.
There's a Duke Carolina game at Carolina on a Saturday, and a Duke Virginia game Duke versus Virginia on a Monday. So
good little weekend right there.
Two pretty good weekend.
Good little weekend right there. Everybody, thanks so much. Hit the like button. Don't forget to subscribe. This is a podcast. Also goes in the Keeping It 1000 podcast feed. See everybody next time.